Well, I'm Jereen Mortensen, and I'm going to talk to you today a little bit about education in Pakistan and Afghanistan and why it is so important that women are educated. I am wearing, I would say, the national dress of Pakistan. Shalwar kameez, this top, baggy pants, and men and women wear essentially the same thing. Except the men's would probably have a pocket and maybe more like a shirt collar. They may even get buttons. But the women don't usually have that. And of course, men don't wear the shawl. I like to tell the story when I'm wearing my outfit that was made in Pakistan. This one was not. A friend of mine made it for me. But my Pakistani outfit, shalwar kameez, I wore, told about it, and I was at a book club and one woman said, "Who made it?" And I said, "Well, a tailor in Islamabad." And she said, "Was that tailor a man?" I said, "Yes." And she said, "In that country, can a man measure a woman who is not his relative?" Well, I didn't know. So when I talked to Greg, I said, "Who made my shalwar kameez?" And he said, "A lady tailor." And I said, "No, it wasn't a lady. It was a man." He said, "Yes, but he was a lady tailor." He was a tailor. He was married. He was in good standing in the community. He fasted during Ramadan. He gave alms. He prayed the prescribed amounts during the day. So he went to the imam of his mosque, who wrote him a letter of recommendation. He went to the government, and he became a lady tailor. Then, I can't do it because I'm wearing this one. But I like to tell people, you don't have any idea who made your clothing. But that outfit of mine was made by a very upstanding man. Well, if we can get over our searching here. Well, what I want to talk about today a bit is what my son has been doing in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Please get a journey of hope. And I have quite a few of them, so if you want to take some for friends or something, pass them around, please do that. In Afghanistan in 2000, when the Taliban were in control, there were 800,000 students in school, almost all of them male. Today there are almost 10 million, and 2.5 million of them are female. Now, how many of you knew that? Don't you think our media should be telling us that? Mm-hmm. You know, what I'm reading in the papers, oh, we're just mired down in Afghanistan, nothing is happening. I think going from 800,000 boys going to school to almost 10 million in school, I think that's huge. And the DVD that I'm going to show will be showing both what Greg is doing, but also what our armed forces are doing. Do you know there are almost 100 million school age people in the world who aren't getting any schooling at all? And do you know the United States military budget could provide school for every single one of them? The whole thing is very interesting. This was on CNN about 3 years ago. So the information that they're going to have on the schools that Central Asia Institute is building is incorrect because there are over 300 projects now. It's also incorrect how many schools the Taliban destroyed. It's way more than the number they're giving. But a year ago, March, Mullah Omar, who is the head of the Afghan Taliban, issued a decree that they should not destroy schools and they should not keep girls from going to school. And there still are a few incidents, but it is way, way less.
Just children.
Okay.
And they are the pride in the field of competition.
Thank you.
Wonderful. I love you.
Oh, my mother said, go to Afghanistan for a suicide attack.
A little louder.
More. They are poor, vulnerable, ripe for recruitment.
These kids are fearing the insurgency.
Caught in the crossfire of war, they can become America's friends.
For the Muslim world, you think a new way forward?
Sure. Or its enemies. I'm Christiana Mansour in Afghanistan, where the U.S. is ramping up its war against the Taliban. But there's another war the U.S. can't afford to lose. President Obama says America cannot have yet another generation of Muslims who see it as the enemy. So come with us to two places, Afghanistan and Gaza, where the battle for young Muslim hearts and minds is the most intense. In the mountains of Afghanistan, a young boy is cast out. And this is how the battle begins.
My stepmother was beating me a lot, and then she forced me to leave the house.
Nasim was just 10 years old when he fled the beatings and
You're just a little boy. It must have been so hard.
Yes, it was very difficult. I was just spending my nights praying to God that someone will help me.
For months, Nasim wandered from village to village in search of food and shelter. He became a virtual slave to the townspeople.
I collected firewood from the mountains for building materials for their homes.
Did you feel sad?
Very sad. I kept asking myself, why do I have to work? All the other children don't.
But all that changed when he arrived in the town of Chakcharan and met this man, Yassin Farid, who works for an American aid group, ASA.
We found Nasim back here, he was begging.
I said, I'm an orphan and I need to stay somewhere. And Yassin took me to the orphanage.
At the orphanage, 150 boys sleep two to a bunk. They wake up to face another day, trying their best to bring some semblance of order to their lives amid the desperation that is Afghanistan.
Do you think that you're cracking the back of this beast?
In the sense of... My guide inside this world is Marnie Gustafson, an American who grew up in Afghanistan.
We've given permission to go on in.
Okay.
Marnie, who runs PASA, has been rebuilding broken shelters in this broken, shattered by 30 years of war and hobbled by a poverty-stricken government.
They were going to shut down this orphanage and send the children back out into the villages.
Really?
Or into the streets or into the madrasas. They were going to do that in November because they ran out of money.
But now, Marnie has brought these children at least a roof over their heads and a chance to choose a life that keeps them off the streets and away from extremism.
There's about, what, they told me about 15? 14, 15 people to a room.
Uh-huh.
And they get, for breakfast, they get bread and some tea.
Uh-huh.
Which
so this is an improvement.
This is an
improvement. This is an improvement for their homes. Yeah. This is an improvement for the orphanage.
Before, there was no glass in the windows and nothing to eat but watery gruel.
There are places many, many world where conditions are equally poor, equally run down. Why, though, do you think it's so important here to try to rescue these kids?
I have it connected with, if Afghanistan is stabilized, my country will be protected. I have that connection.
You do?
Absolutely, without a question. This country needs to be stabilized for our safety.
That's why Mani struggles one family at a time. She took me to a desperately poor neighborhood on the outskirts of town to meet Naseem's mother. She was also kicked out of the house when Naseem's father, an opium farmer, took a second wife.
Salam. Salam. Tell me why you can't have your kids live with you. His father doesn't let me keep them. When he forced me out of his house, he then became a wolf, and my sons had to run away to two different places.
Naseem's older may be in even more danger.
How old is he, the other son?
He's
15 to 16 years old. He has a small beard because Talibs don't shave their beard.
The only thing Mani and her staff learned when they managed to call Naseem's brother is that he's studying in a remote, unsanctioned madrasa and now calls himself Mullah Aladad. She fears that along with food and shelter, Naseem's brother is being fed a steady diet of fundamentalism.
Have you tried to get Naseem's brother out?
No, it would be very dangerous for me to attempt.
Because the Taliban are active there.
And do you think this is prevalent, that there are kids all over this country who, for lack of a helping hand, for lack of something to eat, are driven into these madrasas?
Absolutely. I don't think it was religiously motivated. It was motivated by poverty.
Poverty that hits you in the face at every turn.
This gentleman begs, says a lot of the people up in this very poor area beg. This is the food that they've brought back. He's brought back for the family. He says, and he says, animals wouldn't even eat. This is food. This is dinner, you guys. You see that? It's garbage.
This extreme poverty threatens Afghanistan's future. Because it denies a future for its children, like Naseem. Mani has enrolled him in school now, but he often misses class because he begs on the streets to feed his mother. So she's working on a long-term rescue plan. A cow for his mother so that she can sell milk and Naseem can stay in school.
The main thing is that if we help her with a cow, can she then promise to make sure Naseem goes to school?
But she says no. Her ex-husband's family would steal the cow and eat it.
Is the two boys' struggle, one in a madrasa, the other in the orphanage or begging on the street, is that something that you think is epitomizes what we're going through here in Afghanistan?
I really do. I really think it does. I can only speculate, but it is certain madrasas. They're recruiting them for the insurgency. These children will go into the insurgency in some way or another.
When we come back, one of those children recruited for a suicide attack. You'll find my body in little pieces, sings one young boy in this Taliban propaganda video. It is targeting children, celebrating suicide. The Taliban recruits its young martyrs from madrasas on the Pakistan-Afghan border. Shakirullah was one of them.
My dad was teaching me a couple of pages of the Quran. Then he couldn't do it and sent me to madrasa.
His father sent him to a madrasa when he was just 10 years old for a free education. But Shakiru didn't realize what else lay in store.
I was studying in madrasa when I finished reciting Quran. A mullah came to me and told me that now you have finished Quran, you should go to commit a suicide attack. When I said, no, I'm not going, he forced me to go.
When he was 14, he was smuggled into Afghanistan through an underground network by people he had never met, to a destination he did not know.
I still don't know what type of suicide attack they had planned for me. I still don't know whether God says it's good or bad.
Shakirullah was arrested by Afghan police before he could complete his mission. Sitting now in an Afghan jail, he wonders if he'll ever see his family again.
I miss my mom and dad.
Very vulnerable group of people, mind you, because they don't get very much, I think, not very much information.
There's a huge stake from India.
Azhar Hussain is a Pakistani American whose mission takes him from home in Washington, D.C. to madrasas in the dangerous frontier between Afghanistan and Pakistan.
They don't allow students to read newspapers. They don't allow them to watch television. They don't allow them to listen to the radio, so everything else is a third, fourth hand, but everything else that they hear is from their teachers.
Azhar is on the forefront of a battle to transform Pakistan's madrasas and bring them into the modern world. Many madrasas teach a version of Islam that is locked in the past. Students are rarely taught math or science. Some students had never even heard of Barack Obama, but they have been taught that America is the enemy.
Is the new president a friend of Pakistan or an enemy?
Enemy.
Azhar conducts secret workshops that offer the mullahs a more modern curriculum, and for those who signed up, a chance to upgrade their image from extremist to moderate by teaching them a more tolerant form of Islam.
We do go into some of those verses of Quran by jihad, and if you take a part of the verse, of course it is very clear that what it says, but if you take the full verse, it just changes the meaning.
Like the Bible?
He gave our campus exclusive access to a closed door workshop with madrasa elders like Mullah Fazlur Rahman.
He used to emphasize quite a bit to young students that they are under threat. So a very big part of his teaching was developing identity with young youth as.
And now he teaches them what?
He says you should never fight. That should not be an option in your head as far as this comes to. A lot has changed. The limited thinking we had has been expanded and stretched.
The latest polls show the people of Pakistan have turned against the militant extremists and overwhelmingly support the government's full-scale war against the Taliban. Azhar says the demand for his workshops is now so high that he's received requests from 5,000 madrasas, and the local Taliban don't like what he's doing.
Have you had threats?
Yes. And our partners get threats all the time. Go through these programs and harm you or kill you.
In this young hearts and minds, Azhar faces another hurdle. The US has targeted Al-Qaeda and the Taliban with unmanned drone attacks, but they've also killed innocent civilians.
I was talking to a madrasa leader in Fatah who said, actually your project was doing well, and we had a very hard time recruiting people to fight Americans, and after the drone attack, we have literally hundreds of fighters now.
Although most madrasas don't themselves provide military training, their students are easy targets for the recruiters. Azhar has seen them in action.
These insurgents have come out in a prayer area, the students stand up and start screaming with excitement. It is just so organic that a teenage student is looking up to an insurgent. He wants to be like one.
Like this young Afghan militant studied in a madrasa and now calls himself Mullah Abdullah.
Because I'm a Muslim, I became a Taliban after the infidels occupied our country. When your country is occupied by force, jihad is an obligation.
I think in some ways we have forfeited the terrain to the Al-Qaedas of the world, who are messaging to those young people in sharp and direct ways.
Ibu Patel, a Muslim who grew up in America feeling like an outsider, understands the path to extremism. He's now a White House advisor on Muslim youth.
It's not a question of them being ideologically attracted to the message of extremism. It's simply a question of that's where the jobs are, that's where the school is, that's where the free lunch program is. I think that one of the central issues of the 21st century is that we rise or fall on them rising or falling.
Shakirullah is one who has fallen. His madrasa education landed him behind bars, where he is now facing at least 5 years for his attempted suicide bombing. Up next, I track down an American who's devoted his life to giving the children of Afghanistan and Pakistan something better. We're on a dangerous back road in Afghanistan, heading towards Taliban country, to meet one of America's most successful fighters against extremism. At our rendezvous, we're approached by the security.
Hello, how are you?
Famously hard to track down, today, Greg Mortensen is surrounded by armed men, but that's not how he fights his battles.
An old village chief once told me, if you really want to do something here, you need 3 cups of tea.
3 cups of tea is the title of Greg's best-selling book, based on his real-life adventures in Pakistan and here in Afghanistan.
First cup, you're a stranger. Second cup, a friend. And third cup, you become family. And for a family, we're prepared to do anything, even die.
Greg's own brush with death gave him his lifelong mission. 15 years ago, this American from Montana attempted to scale the world's second highest peak, Pakistan's treacherous K2. But he failed, stumbling down the mountains, sick and exhausted. He was nursed back to health in a remote village in the foothills.
One day, I walked behind the village and saw 84 children sitting in the dirt during the school lessons. Most of them were riding with sticks in the sand. And it was that very rash moment they asked for help to build a school. This is in September 93. I said, I'll promise to build a school for you.
And did you?
I built a school and then 78 more and still doing it today.
Working with local villagers, Greg's Central Asia Institute now educates 30,000 students, mostly girls, in places where outsiders dare not venture.
Our primary area of focus is in areas where there are no schools or there's no girls going to school, and that's usually because of religious extremism or areas of very remote physical isolation.
Places like Lalanda Village, last stop on today's very rough journey.
What's going on? Can't be blocked, is it? Police are all out. Look.
Once we get there, Greg finds good friends waiting for him. Like Fazal Ahmed. Before visiting the school, they will pray together at his son's grave.
He's the brightest student in the school. He's 11. He was herding goats after school. He stepped on this old Soviet mine here that blasted him up. He died about 10 hours later from...
When Fazal got over the shock of losing his son, he decided to do two things. Dedicate his life to removing Afghanistan's landmines and make sure that his daughters got the chance his son never did.
I want all of them to be educated and become whatever they want to be. Doctors, engineers, or teachers. If they have education, they can do it. But without it, they can't do a thing.
His 13-year-old daughter, Saida, studies in this homeschool that Greg has organized because the Taliban targets public schools for girls.
Saida, do you like learning? Are you glad you're being educated?
Yes, I'm happy to learn so I can have a good future.
What do you want to be?
Doctor.
Do you think girls can be future leaders of Afghanistan? Can you be a leader?
Well, that's why I'm not a junior.
If you're educated, of course.
Why is it so important to educate girls beyond the obvious equality?
When I see girls learning how to read and write, they often teach their mother how to read and write.
Not only does this improve the lives of their family and their community, but Greg has also found that educated women can be a firewall against extremism.
When someone goes on jihad, they first should get permission and blessings from their mother. If they don't, it's very shameful or disgraceful. And I saw that happen after 9/11. They're primarily targeting illiterate, impoverished society because many educated women were refusing to allow their son in the Taliban.
The Taliban target schools, and in the last 2 years, 640 have been closed. They tried to do it right here in Lalanda.
About a dozen Taliban came in at night. There were some shots fired, and the next they said, if anybody comes to school, we're going to kill you. But the community basically got the Taliban out of here.
Greg believes the villagers are willing to fight for their schools because they provide the land and the labor.
The guards here have orders from the commandant that if anybody harms any student or shoots anyone, just kill them. Don't ask questions.
Really, commandant? It's a shoot to kill order?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
That's a lot of the crew.
This was a day to give Greg a hero's
welcome.
And to celebrate the feast of Nowruz, the Afghan New Year. Should I sit down? Is that appropriate? I'll sit down here.
Yeah. Is that funny? Is that funny?
Funny because I was the only woman sitting on the ground with all these men. But despite all the smiles, Greg and the village elders share a serious mission, winning the battle for the next generation. You used to be U.S.
I'm a veteran, yes.
Does your sort of civilian effort, how does it contribute to counterinsurgency, or does it?
When I talk to any of the commanders here, they'll say that what we need, we don't need guns, we don't need bombs. What we need is education. Before the school was here, about 60-70% of the boys did go to the extremist madrasa here. Now they're pretty much non-existent.
Guys, what does that mean to you? What has he done for you?
Now we will be educated and our future will be good.
And what do the teachers think? Do you think because these kids are now in a proper school, will they be friends of America in the future?
Absolutely. All these kids are all studying in the school. Otherwise, they've been studying in a mosque.
It's one more victory in Greg Mortensen's 15-year battle.
Okay, this stuff is really key successful.
Next. Soldiers trying to fight a war Greg's way, with books and not bombs. Aboard a Black Hawk heli, Pashto. We're on our way to eastern Afghanistan, towards the Pakistan border, where the war against the Taliban is raging. But it's a different kind of battle that we're going to see today.
Obviously, because of the danger, the roadside bombs, the suicide bombers, protection is very heavy. All of this, however, when it comes to winning hearts and minds, puts a lot of distance between the soldiers and the people.
You could ride my vehicle, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Lieutenant Colonel Steve Kobosky is the unit commander.
What's the security threat if we head out?
There's a lot of folks out there that don't like us, and they'll kill any Americans they can find.
But these soldiers aren't going to fight the Taliban with bullets and bombs. Borrowing a page from Greg Mortensen's playbook, they're on a reconnaissance mission, looking for the best place to build a school.
Okay, go ahead and drop port.
And they found it. Right here in the middle of nowhere. Row upon row of school children are organized into neat outdoor classes. Several thousand students diligently counting in English. Even at this age, they know they want to communicate with the rest of the world.
I've never seen anything like this. All these children outside, almost like classes, open air.
It's difficult for them to start. Brains are boiling.
Haji Azim Khan, the education director, says that in his district alone, 33,000 students are studying outside in the sun. Amir John is an Afghan interpreter.
Unfortunately, in this year we had no schools in some of our areas. If we will have schools, it's very important. Our kids, they can get education in the future. They will understand who is our enemy and who is our friend.
Now, John, yes. Some of these supplies are from American students, much like themselves.
Doling out pens and pencils, dressed in full combat gear, Major Gary Knorr is trying his best to meet the needs here. He says the children are the key to winning over their parents and eventually this war.
If we can sway the civilian population and show them that we're here to support their children, then they are going to in turn not have the bad guys that come in here.
Just days before we arrived, the bad guys had attacked.
Tell me what happened.
We counted the IED, destroyed one of the vehicles. Two of my men expired on site. The other two got here at the hospital with pain in the neck.
So is this working? Is winning hearts and minds, the battle for hearts and minds, is it working for you?
If we go out there again and show the locals that we're not going to be driven out, we've got to carry on the mission for the guys that aren't here anymore. Otherwise, they'll die in vain.
But these girls are living proof that American soldiers didn't die in vain.
Hello, what's your name?
Abdullah.
Okay. What do the girls think about the Americans being here? What does she think?
We like them because they've come.
You're not scared of them?
No.
They are afraid of the Taliban, who last year attacked 293 schools, severely burning a dozen girls with acid to keep them from going to class.
If your school was threatened and somebody wanted to close it down, what would you do?
We want our school to be built, not destroyed.
But in parts of Afghanistan, the Taliban have seized the initiative, killing and even beheading anyone they catch cooperating with Americans. We asked this young Taliban fighter whom we met earlier, Mullah Abdullah, why they've attacked civilians.
We only kill those who are against it. We are not terrorists nor cannibals. We only impose punishments based on Islamic law.
Like all the Taliban we meet, he gives us his harsh version of Islamic law with its unrealistic conditions.
We'll give girls permission to go to school, but only if they are accompanied by a close male relative, and boys and girls are not mixed in one school. But for now, that's not possible.
But these children aren't willing to wait for a normal childhood.
Esamala, can you read this for me?
This is a book.
Very good.
Esanola's dreams are no different than any child's.
What would be your dream school?
It would have a safe building, good books, computers.
Computer? You want to learn computer?
Yes.
All right. Get on the internet?
Yes.
Don't have to be very patient with us.
Major Knorr tells Haji Khan, the education director, that he won't abandon this project.
My hope and my heart is that we have groundwork started on this before I leave in July. One thing I've learned is from Iraq and Afghanistan, unless you have something to set down in front of the man, you do not promise him.
But this is what it looks like when Americans do make promises.
So you had a longer look at Afghanistan, and I think it's very interesting. Talked recently to Greg, and he says he thinks in Afghanistan the armed forces are ahead of our State Department. The State Department now in Pakistan and Afghanistan have issued, no one is to go out of the compound to have dinner with anyone, to meet any families, to have tea. If they have a meeting outside, go to the meeting, come right back. Which is quite opposite of what the armed forces are doing, getting right out there. And as she said, you know, when they go in full combat gear, you've got something against you right to start with. But they're trying to build those bridges. And the Army has built quite a few schools. CAI doesn't go in any place and build a school unless the village requests it. And like Habitat for Humanity, the people have to have sweat equity in it. They have to furnish the land. They have to help build it. CAI will buy the materials that the village can't afford to buy, but they're built by the people in the village, and it makes a huge difference. Just like, as I said, Habitat for Humanity. The default on those homes is very, very low because the people have sweat equity in them. We've got about 15 minutes. I can talk for 2 hours, but maybe you have questions.
You mentioned that this piece from CNN was produced about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
From your talking to Greg and your reading of the situation there, what's different? What has changed? How have things improved or not?
Well, since that time, the buildup has gone on of troops, so there are a lot more troops there. But one of the biggest things is the number of kids in school. That's huge that we don't hear about here. The Taliban have been driven back. They're getting more desperate. A lot of the Taliban, they're similar to gangs here, and they're mixed up with the Russian mafia, with mostly from Chechnya, in the drug trade. And so that's all going on, and they're not a worldwide group like Al-Qaeda. And most of the people in Pakistan and Afghanistan really resent Al-Qaeda because they're largely Arabs, so they see them as foreigners, but they do have a lot of money. I don't know if that answered your question or not. If the American troops go, and they will be, there's going to be a lot more killing. If they don't go, more Americans are going to be killed. And Greg says he's glad he doesn't have to make that decision because it isn't going to be an easy one to make.
The schools that Greg has started, are most of them still in operation?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of villages that weren't, and there were some, I don't know, deliberate or undeliberate, on the CBS program, but some of them have been taken over by the government, and that's exactly what they want to happen. They build the school, the village has it, now the government is paying for supplies and teachers, so that's an ideal situation, and it isn't that they're not operating anymore. But most of them are operating because it's a community request, and they have hundreds of requests for more schools. And they are building 5 in Tajikistan, right on the border, with the same people who live in the Wakhan corridor in Afghanistan. Some of the Tajiks are over the border, and they don't have schools there.
You mentioned that the military had built some schools.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a connection with CAI and the military?
No.
No.
No, they're
still
no,
separate.
They're separate.
But those schools also have girls in them.
Yes. I can't say for sure. I think so, but I really don't know if they're building girls' schools or not.
That's what we're looking for.
CAI has concentrated on schools for girls. As they said, one of the things is if you're going on jihad, you have to have your mother's permission. And by the way, the Quran forbids suicide. They forbid killing of civilians or the innocents. So when they think they're doing it for the glory of Allah and Islam, that's forbidden. Suicide bombing started in India with the Hindus when they were having all the trouble after the partition. Bangladesh, which was probably the poorest country in the world, about 25 years ago, made a real attempt to have education at least through fifth grade. Not 100%, but a large percentage of the kids there went to school. The population growth, which was an explosion, is leveling off and is going to start to fall. Infant mortality has gone way down. In HIV and AIDS isn't a huge problem in that part of Central Asia, but in Africa, they have found one of the least expensive, most effective ways of stopping the epidemic is to educate girls, that they go to school. They have found when girls are educated, the standard of living goes up, infant mortality goes down, the birth rate goes down, agricultural practices are better. There are so many things that happen. One of the interesting things I think, Greg mentioned, a lot of these little girls are teaching their mothers how to read and write. I had dinner with some Pakistanis and I said, well, is this happening with men too? And they laughed and said, oh no, no Pakistani man would let his son tell him anything. So, when you go to market, they usually use newspapers to wrap up your rice or your mulberries or apricots or whatever. And they cook over fires. Newspaper's great to start a fire. But now in the night, in the evening, after chores are done, after prayers, the women will smooth out the newspaper and the little girls are reading the newspaper to their mothers. And it's the first time many of those women have had any information beyond their own village. Maybe they know what's happening in their birth village if they can possibly get together with their mother or or their sisters, but that doesn't happen a lot. So now they're getting much more of a world view through the market and through the newspapers. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there anything we can do as individuals or individual churches to help what's going on?
Well, you can certainly help CAI. A lot of times people say they want to send pencils or something, and it's just too expensive. Unless you know someone in the armed forces, then you can use these flat rate military boxes. And sometimes if kids like to send something definite like that, that's a way to do it. And there's a address there where you can help.
About
yes.
The political situation in Pakistan, is that, or in Afghanistan, are they both still pretty volatile?
It's volatile, it's corrupt. In most very poor places, there is corruption. But the minister of the Department of Education is not corrupt, very capable. And Greg thinks he's doing really a great job. And he's cooperating with all the agencies.
Is he active in both Afghanistan and Pakistan?
I'm sorry?
Is he building schools in both Afghanistan?
Yes, he started in Pakistan, and in the second book he wrote Stones into Schools when he had the request to build in Afghanistan. If you did see the 60 Minutes program where they showed this school CAI built and it was vacant and there was snow. It's a school where nomads are. Of course no one was there. It would be like taking a picture of a school here in the summer and saying, Chelan built this expensive school and no one goes to it. There's plenty of kids there when the grass is green and their cattle are there. But educating women is so important. And it will make a difference in the world. And it's about time for dinner, but one other thing that Afghanistan has, they probably have about $3 billion in minerals. What's the one you need for building the batteries and?
Lithium.
Lithium, yes. And Greg has said he thinks maybe one of the best things the U.S. could do is build a school of mines so the Afghans would have their own people to be the mining engineers, because there's going to be a huge fight between the countries around there that will want to get access to these minerals. And there just aren't geologists, trained Afghan geologists. So if you know anyone in a school of mines, that would be something to say, hey, get some people over there. Thanks for your attention. I'm sorry I couldn't show you other slides. Just one of the things, there are, as far as I know, 7 girls now that started out in schools in Pakistan that are in medical school. A couple are studying engineering, lots of training for nurses, maternal health care. Aziza, who came to Greg in 2000, she was a little girl who went to school in her village, the only girl in the village that went to school, but her father recognized she was very bright, and she went to school with the boys. And then in third and fourth grade, the teacher would not let her in the classroom. So she sat outside the window, and with pen and paper her father bought her, she wrote down everything she heard the teacher saying. She was allowed to be in the class in fifth grade. They have a national exam at fifth grade. She scored the highest of anyone in the village. She walked to a middle school and then got to 10th grade, and she was, after that, she was kind of at the end of her road. And Greg just happened to be in that town. She came to him and said, is there anything you can do for me? I want to continue my education, but it would cost, well, in rupees, but in dollars, about $400 a year to go to this school, to have a place to stay, And she said, my whole family, we just don't have that kind of money. And I want to be a maternal health care worker. My mother died in childbirth, as did up to 25 women a year in our valley. So she became the first ever scholarship student. And right now CAI is kind of concentrating on scholarships for women. She was the first ever scholarship student of CAI, went 2 years to maternal health training, $800. Not a single woman has died in childbirth in that valley since. 2010 was the last I knew the statistics.
Where do they go for the training? The training?
There is Girls High School in Skardu, which is a horrible road journey or an hour's airplane ride away. And then a lot of it is in Lahore for the regular medical school and engineering. So only one person has come to the U.S. And they prefer to, if they can, to educate in the country. But the woman who came to the U.S. went to Montana State in Bozeman, and now she is back in charge of all the scholarships girls arranging for that. So I better let you go to lunch. Thank you.